You've worked hard to build your business, and now it's time to grow. Welcome to the Multiply Your Success podcast. I'm your host, Tom Dufour, CEO of Big Sky Franchise Team and a serial entrepreneur. And as we get started on today's episode, the question we open with is, when is the last time you were involved with your industry trade association? There are a lot of them out there. Most industries have one or two or three. What have you been doing to get involved with that, if anything? And if you're thinking about franchising or you're in the franchising business, when's the last time you got involved or did anything with the International Franchise Association? The International Franchise Association is an amazing, amazing organization. It's been around for a really, really long time, since 1960, and it is the world's oldest and largest organization representing the franchise industry. So if you're not familiar with it, you need to be. And we are fortunate and so grateful to have Robert Crisanti, who is the current president and CEO of the IFA, as our guest for today's episode. And Robert shares his phenomenal background, both in the private sector, in the public sector, serving, and just a really, really wide cross-section of experiences that he has had in his career. And we are so grateful for it. And a quick note for you, the International Franchise Association is in the middle of hosting its annual convention, and this year's convention is online. So the second half of the International Franchise Convention is happening this week, February 22nd through the 25th, the 22nd through the 25th. And you can go to franchise.org/convention, franchise.org/convention, and it's all virtual this year, so you can watch it anywhere. So we'll go ahead and jump into the interview with Robert here. And just a quick note, there was a little bit of feedback on the line in the recording. We did our best through some audio cleanup here to make it a little bit clearer, but I promise you the interview is worth it. Stick with it. Stay with us. It's a phenomenal interview here.
I'm Robert Crisanti. I'm the president and CEO of the International Franchise Association, located here in Washington, D.C.
Great. And thank you again for being here, Robert. Our audience is listening in. I've been in and around the International Franchise Association pretty much my whole career, and so I'm very familiar with it. But for someone who's maybe not as familiar with the IFA, would you fill our audience in on that?
Yes, thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. And thanks for your engagement, involvement, and lending your brain power to our processes. We are a large trade association, the largest franchise trade association in the world. We have about 1,500 member companies that are brands of various different kinds. We represent both franchisors, of which there are approximately 1,500. We also have franchisees, and we have as many as 80 or 90,000 of them active on some of our networks. And we lastly also, and not least importantly, represent suppliers, who coach and teach many times, who implement and market and do the legal work for the brands and for the franchisees all throughout. So it's a fantastic organization, and I've had the great privilege of leading it over the last almost 5 years now.
Wow. Well, and Robert, I appreciate you sharing that information here, and your leadership has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed all of the great things you've been doing for the franchise community at large under your leadership here. So thank you for all of that. And as one of the questions I'm sure folks would like to know about is, how do you become the president of a global international association? So how does that happen?
It's been an interesting career. I came to Washington with a huge commitment to want to do public policy. So when I graduated law school, I turned down a very high paying job for a job that paid nothing for several months, and then turned into a job that paid about half of what I was making before I went to law school. my parents profound, sincerely believed that I had fallen and hit my head. And I spent significant quality time on Capitol Hill, almost a decade of my career, and rose up to be a staff director of a full committee. I worked in the House and in the Senate, and my specialization and specialty was in the banking, financial services, and technology space. So it was great, but I think the thing that you wouldn't know about me unless you'd had a chance to spend some time with me is I grew up in Germany until I was 19 years old, and came to the United States to begin my career and my education, really my professional education, in what my grandmother always called das Land der unbegrenzten Möglichkeiten, the land of unlimited opportunities. And I have conversations with people all the time about the fact that there is sometimes a lack of appreciation of how good we have it here in the United States as Americans. And the challenges, business challenges, big and small businesses have in other countries that seem to be very developed and sometimes seem very, compelling if you want to do business there.
Wow. What a story. I did not realize that you came to the States. So Germany, is that where you grew up? And
yeah, I grew up in Germany until I was 19. We spent about 6 months in 1976 here in the United States when I was little. And then we went back to Germany. We traveled and lived all throughout Germany for all those years and in different places. About every 2 or 3 years we moved. So I got a lot of different exposures to different parts. I learned English in second grade when my parents put me through an American school. That's why you don't detect an accent. Or if there is one, then it's probably affected after I got here. this has been a wonderful place, and I'm just incredibly grateful to get a chance to do that. So after I left Capitol Hill, Tom, I went to work in a trade association did a bunch of work in the technology space. And then when President Bush was president, he needed some help on the technology side. And number three spot, the undersecretary spot in the U.S. Department of Commerce opened up. And I was unanimously approved, maybe one of the few unanimous acts of the United States Senate in the last many years, that was unanimously approved to be undersecretary for technology, which included four groups, including NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology in the United States. So about 3,400 employees, about $1 billion budget, and I worked there for several years, and then went back out into the private sector.
Great. Thank you. So, and I'm sure the audience would love to hear a little bit about what the IFA is doing specifically for the franchise community, especially given the pandemic that occurred. I know that you were very active and the IFA was very active in supporting the franchise community and small business community. Could you talk a little bit about that, especially for folks who may not be paying attention to what you're doing behind the scenes?
And that is almost, everyone, Tom. You know, everyone's head is down trying to keep their businesses alive and thriving in the places where they're still allowed to function. Less than half of our franchise concepts are food concepts. So the other 60% are really distressed, looking at hotels and lodging. The impacts, you've read them in the newspapers, you've seen what's happened to the stocks of the travel and hospitality companies and so forth. And so we very early sat down hard and decided that we are going to begin over communicating, if you will, in podcasts. So I'm sorry, in webinars, but they're on our website, so you can watch them in that way as a member. But we started opening them up to everyone, IFA members or not, in franchising. Started discussing the issues of how do you, in a pandemic, reopen your store? What are the concerns that you have for your employees, for your customers? How do you best take care of them? And that's, we didn't substitute IFA's worldview for that. We brought experts in from some of the largest companies. What happens when you have a casual dining concept restaurant and people don't think of you as a takeout food, location? And so we had entrepreneurs that, you know, some of the best ideas came from some of the smallest companies, and they were integrated, in fact, with some of the larger companies. And so we had how do you get notice in your local communities? How do you continue to show that you're a local business owned by a local family who, you know, went to high school and whose family has roots in that community? And so we talked about that a lot. And there are literally since March through the end of the year, there were over 100 webinars that we produced. We started hearing about the cash shortages. We started hearing about the fact that insurance was not covering. People had something called business interruption insurance. And when I met with Secretary Mnuchin, and I said to him, you know, the shocking thing to everybody, speaking with one loud voice on behalf of 770,000 store locations in the United States, we all thought we were insured for business interruption, but instead business interruption insurance tends to be business destruction insurance. So what's covered is when your business gets physically destroyed. And so people who had that insurance coverage didn't know it. Hugely frustrating for these small businesses, and to find that they've been paying all of these payments and have no coverage for their losses. So we got active with the government. The government was very concerned that the states, their unemployment programs could not hold up, and that having a tidal wave of unemployed hit those state unemployment offices would swamp them. And so they decided to go through the current employers as much as they could, and they created a fund, this PPP fund, PPE fund to go out and allow financial resources to go through the businesses to the employees and help the businesses keep their doors open. How can you justify keeping 10 people in your hotel when you have four guests? So this encouraged people to retain as many staff as they could, with the hope that the loan would then be forgiven at the end of the day. And criteria were established, and we got the money out. In addition to the $2,000 that came out that we advocated for as a stimulus payment to lower income or middle income people, we had this money to which people were eligible. Then there was massive confusion because these are huge volumes of money. How do you get them out? It was decided to go through the Small Business Administration, which was great, except that the Small Business Administration doesn't consider some franchises perfected franchises or eligible franchises under their system. And the reasoning behind this is to me has always been a mystery and somewhat nonsensical in certain cases. And so you had companies like McDonald's and so forth, whose franchisees were so well capitalized that they had never taken an SBA loan to fund any of their businesses. Now, all of a sudden, they hadn't applied. They had no McDonald's wasn't on register as a franchise system there. So how do you accelerate all these processes? IFA was Horatio at the bridge. A government relations team worked on all of those issues. I flew in the fall of last year, 14 franchise CEOs into Washington, D.C. to have meetings with Secretary Mnuchin about You know, what is the second PPP round going to look like? We had a major, we had a major problem with loan forgivability. So clarification there. Once we got the loan forgivability established, then the next question happened, which is loan forgivability is in place. All of a sudden now under tax law, as a small business owner, you owe taxes on the amount of money that you just took in because the loan was, in quotes, forgiven. Well, the loan was to keep people employed in your store primarily. And so, you know, you do the government a good turn and they come back and tax you for something that got you no benefit, and you would never have maintained, you wouldn't have kept the store open because the profits didn't, you know, you have no profit. Now you're deemed to have made a bunch of money. You have to pay for it. And so we worked through element after element after element of that stuff. And we have been, you know, fantastically successful there. All of that doesn't make life a lot easier for you if you own a trampoline park and it's been shut down in the state of Illinois because they're not allowing you to reopen again until there is herd immunity in the public. So these are the challenges that and they're just myriad of them that I just, I think that I've had, that we've addressed throughout the year that have been huge challenges.
Yeah. Well, and thank you for sharing that. And, you know, as someone who's been, been participating in your webinars, they've been fantastic, so timely. I know I was tuning in for information. I said, what is the IFA saying? What are you doing? How can I get involved to support in all of the different things you had going on? So I'm grateful for that as a member. So thank you for that. And, I guess it's hard to it's hard to underemphasize how critical the IFA has been in your efforts in supporting, especially that small business, the franchisees out there, and franchisors too, and especially the franchisees that are out there operating. What you were doing behind the scenes was it cannot be understated, in my opinion, with your effort and directly connected to Congress and the White House and doing everything you could to help support us out there.
This is the best. I've done a lot of things after leaving Capitol Hill. I came to Capitol Hill because I was drawn to public service, and I've analogized this position in my career as being the most like that, because I have the most likable and positive clients that you can possibly have. This is the incorporation of the American dream. I call it our little American dream factory because there are, this is the embodiment of creating intergenerational wealth. It's hard work. There should be no confusion about how hard franchises work and how hard franchisees work in particular. And just because you're in a franchise, by the way, doesn't mean that it is a slam dunk. So getting advice, learning how to ask questions before you buy into a concept, not doing it on a pure passion play. You have to have passion for what you do in life to be successful, in my experience. But educating yourself, taking a look before you leave, getting the drawing on the advice of experts out there is essential to making the right decision. And we're in one of these turns of the economy, much like we were in 2008 and 2009. Where we're going to see a lot of folks that are in the franchise sales business have told me that inquiries are up 60 or 70% because people who work in large corporations that have been downsized or right-sized or undersized, are looking to use their training, their expertise in budgeting, their personnel management and hiring skills to, bring themselves into a position where they can own their own business. Maybe they don't know how to make yogurt or french fries or any of those things, You know, maybe they don't know how to run a massage, you know, a health spa or beauty spa. Maybe they don't know how to cut hair. But that's what the franchise business model is about. Those are all things that can be taught. And oftentimes those, you know, the combination of the individual skill set that they bring meshed together with the skill set of the franchisor and the market presence and understanding of the franchisor is really, the best and most even avenue to personal financial success.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, being in the franchise business, I feel have very similar passion for franchising and what it can do. And thank you for your perspective on that, Robert. And, well, what I'd like to do, Robert, is take the last little part of our interview here. And we ask every guest the same questions before they go. So, so we talk about the idea of misses, makes, and multipliers. And so you've had quite a decorated career. And so we always ask, is there a miss or two that came along the way and something you might have learned from it that you could share with the audience?
Yeah, you know, I think all of us that do what we do, that pursue, you know, our businesses with passion, have a very common miss in our lives. And I think that is the work-life balance. Before I got married, you know, after I graduated from school, or maybe even before I graduated school, I put everything, passion, energy, commitment, dedication into my education and into my work life. And so, I think looking back over the years, and I told the story to one of our board members, who's a good friend of mine, Jerry Crawford, Jana King, and we were having this discussion, and I said, when I dropped my oldest daughter off at school, college, almost 4.5 years ago now, I sat in the car and cried one of the ugliest cries I've ever had. I caught myself looking up in the mirror and seeing a red face, the tears running down my face, and having a really ugly cry. And the reason I felt that way is because she grew up so fast. So I think that there are some real amazing examples out there, being the Dwyer Owens and others from, you know, formerly of the Dwyer Group and now Neighborly. There are people who have some amazing stories and they have managed to strike a better balance. I've consistently had misses there. I try very hard, but you know, recognizing that that life is fleeting, you know, and that you have to make these kinds of sacrifices. You also need to incorporate your family. So that's definitely a miss.
I appreciate that, Robert, and I think for when you love what you do. Sometimes it's hard to know where that line is, right? Where do you stop? When does it end? Because you love what you do. You have a passion for it.
Yes. And you know, the reminder when your wife is in your ear or your spouse is in your ear telling you, you know, maybe it's not the best place to have your iPhone with you at the beach. you know, on the rare occasion we get out on a vacation, then maybe you should, you should listen to that and give it the credibility it deserves. Because I think we find that that is one of the big mistakes.
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly I think one of the great things that happened to me is I left Capitol Hill and government service. And for, 6.5 years, I was in a very well compensated, wonderful, position where I had a lot of success, and there was certainly a financial reward. And then the White House calls and asks me to go back into public service and cut my salary into less than a third. And so I think that at the time I was thinking, what am I doing considering this? And in retrospect, it was actually one of the biggest makes. It's one of the things that I really am proud of in my career. I made the right decision to come back and serve in the administration. And I did it once when I was younger, certainly working on Capitol Hill, giving up a major, you know, law firm job in Texas when I graduated from law school, and coming up here and doing this was one thing. And at the end of those days, as an early 20s person, having manipulated and fixed, manipulated in a good way, and fixed public policy problems that affected hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of people, veterans, military, the military quality of life for military spouses, how stocks are traded and the options around those stocks, how they're priced, the level of competition in those markets. As a young 20-year-old, on Capitol Hill, working for my amazing boss, those were very heavy things, and they were definitely makes. Even though they may not have been financially as rewarding, they were personally incredibly rewarding and fulfilling. And I think that IFA falls into that service in a way too, because it is fulfilling to know that we're making things better for franchisors and franchisees out there, and for the whole business model. There's a long way to go. There's a lot of stuff that still needs to be fixed. I was with the Federal Trade Commission recently, and I talked about some of the problems with some concepts that are out there where there's just been outright fraud. And I said to them, it's just somebody intimated in a question, is this something that IFA endorses, wants to protect these franchisors? And I said, absolutely the opposite. You know, if there's someone out there who's a fraudster, who's taking people's money and running off to Israel, and leaving this whole group of franchisees out there hanging, that is a black eye for our industry. And so, we have to do something about that. And the education that IFA has put forward is one thing. There are many professionals like you out there, Tom, that can counsel people, but certainly getting informed and certainly speaking to a lot of people in and around what you're doing before you make those decisions is at the core of it. And so I think that those are all big makes.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing all of those. I really appreciate it. And one of my favorite questions is this idea of a multiplier. And we always get a wide range of answers from that. And being in the franchise business, franchising is a great multiplier in and of itself. But is there anything in particular that you've done or seen or used throughout your career?
I can just tell you, both on the business and the personal side, there's only one answer for me. I suffer from a lack of imagination, but there's only one answer for me. And that answer is people. I have had a pleasure of working and assembling, like here at IFA at this point, I have an amazing team that is around us that works their guts out and that is highly talented, that could go to work anywhere else in town. They choose to stay here because of the environment that we've created, because of the clients that we have. And they're not Pollyannish, they're mature professionals, but working with those people, that is the multiplier. And I think no matter what you do, if you surround yourself with good people, good employees, with good friends, and you're on the personal side, they will push you to growth. They will push you to challenge convention and the way you think about things. They will push you to execution. So I'm a big believer in, and it makes me most proud, not when my kids bring home a great grade from school, but rather when I see them choosing great friends. I think that is the alpha and the omega of what we do, who we surround ourselves with.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. And the last question we'd like to ask every guest is, what does success mean to you?
It was always the same. Success meant freedom to me. And I think when I came to the United States from Germany, and I was just on a German foundation call recently, and it's sort of the libertarian branch of the German political system, and I talked about why I came to the United States and the levels of regulation and judgment that people in business had growing up in my town. You know, you wanted to open up a second store and you had to go plead your case with the mayor for opening up a second store. And you wanted to open up a third store, the mayor would look at you and say, we should have you psychologically evaluated for megalomania. You want to open a third store, there's only one of you. Why would any person need two? Never mind three stores. And you would just say these business licenses were, the level of governmental control, the level of people substituting their judgment for what is better for you to do with your money and how you engage was just shocking to me. And it never sat, even though I grew up there and spoke German as a native language first, that regulation, that level of regulation, that big government overview, never made sense to me. And so today, when you ask me what does success mean, it means the freedom to make the decisions for yourself. And I think that that's very American.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Absolutely. And well, Robert, as we're concluding the interview, is there anything you'd like to share or leave with the audience before we close out?
Well, thank you. Tom, I think I've said it a couple of times, but I want to reiterate it at the close. If you're looking into the franchise business, please, please, please do yourself a favor. Talk to people that are in that space with that company and with companies that are that are similarly competitive in that space. If it's a printing company, talk to multiple printing companies and to their franchisees. Those business guys, for the most part, will give you very good, and gals will give you good information, amazing information. Read, attend some of the lectures from people who've got an incredible amount of experience. Come to an IFA convention or event. Most of them are virtual now. Our big annual convention is coming up here shortly. It's going to be held virtually. It should have been in Las Vegas this year, but it will be held virtually. Go there. There's as much good information as you can possibly consume to help inform your decision making. So that would be my strong urging to you.
Great. Well, Robert, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much again for being here and for your time and for being so generous with your time. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for all you do for us, Tom. And thank you. Good luck.
Robert, thank you again for being so gracious with your time and for leading such a great organization with great people. We're so grateful for what you're doing at the IFA every day, every week, every month for the franchise community. Thank you for that. And now let's jump into today's three key takeaways. So number one that really stood out to me was to do what you love and make an impact. Do what you love and make an impact. That really stood out to me when he was talking about his career. Number two, I loved when he said for the multiplier, it's all about having great people. Surrounding yourself with great people, it makes a huge difference. And I love that story he told that, you know, he's never so happy than when his kids have great friends and they're surrounding themselves with great people. And I think the same that what he's saying here is true for what you do in your career and work as well. And number three is kind of the old adage of, you know, don't forget to stop and smell the roses. And he talked about early on in his career when he was really working a lot and maybe didn't spend as much time with his family as he would have liked to. So just a reminder for us, you know, stop and smell the roses every once in a while. And now it's time for today's win-win. So today's win-win, I'm sure you could probably have guessed this, is get involved with your trade association and really get involved with the International Franchise Association if you're in franchising or thinking about it. It's a great organization and they do phenomenal things. And I know the win-win here is when you get involved with your trade association, remember, join a committee, volunteer, go to events, conferences, webinars, whatever they're doing. Participate, be involved. Don't just pay your dues and go away, because then you're going to say, well, what's the value in it for me? Get involved, meet some great people. And then number two, in meeting those great people, new doors and opportunities will open up. It always seems to go that way. So that's today's win-win. Thank you all for being here this week. I really appreciate it. Please make sure you subscribe. Please share this. Tag someone in social media. Say, hey, you got to check this out. Give us a review, and we'll see you back here next week.